Duly Noted, a health and care podcast, is the official podcast series of Duly Health and Care. Each podcast features physicians or team members discussing groundbreaking topics and innovations that help listeners reimagine and better understand an extraordinary health and care experience.
In today's episode, we have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Vishal Desai, a board-certified gastroenterologist. Dr. Desai specializes in preventative medicine and healthy lifestyle practices, focusing on nutrition. We will be discussing the intriguing connection between your diet and digestive health. Doctor, so glad to have you on the podcast today. To start us out, can you tell us, how does the food we eat impact our gut health and our digestive system?
Oh, it's great to be here. The food that we eat definitely affects our digestive health. It affects nutrient absorption. It affects our gut microbiome balance. It affects motility of the intestines and colon as well. So the food that we put into our system is incredibly important when it comes to the overall health of our digestive system.
Great. And what are some common digestive issues that can be linked to what we're eating?
So first of all, a very common symptom, acid reflux, heartburn. Our typical triggers for that are caffeine, tomato-based foods, citrus-based foods, really spicy, acidic, fatty or fried foods, or overeating more often than not can trigger acid reflux and heartburn. In terms of constipation, a diet consisting of low fiber, excessive processed foods, which, you know, as we all know, is readily available at our fingertips, inadequate hydration. On the other extreme from constipation, diarrhea. So artificial sweeteners are in everything. Dairy can cause diarrhea in lactose intolerant individuals. Greasy foods, also excessive caffeine can be a trigger for diarrhea. IBS is kind of like an umbrella term, or functional GI disorders are an umbrella term for like gas, bloating, issues with constipation, diarrhea. But bloating, cramping, irregular bowel movements, I mean, really high fatty foods, artificial sweeteners, like we talked about, caffeine, alcohol is a common culprit, and certain fermentable carbohydrates. So there's a diet called a low FODMAP diet, and we can get into that in a little bit. But that can contribute to symptoms of irritable bowel syndrome. And then, you know, there's a lot of individuals who have intolerances, not so much allergies, which is more consistent with celiac disease, but food intolerances are incredibly common as well. So the food that we're putting into our system, and everyone's system is very different, but the food that we put into our system can affect multiple different types of symptoms and affect bowel regularity as well.
Well, I'd love to touch on this idea of how we eat. You mentioned portion size, and overeating will, of course, lead to some digestive issues. But can we talk about things like how quickly you're eating your meals and how many meals you're having per day? How do those things affect our digestive habits?
They have a very important effect on our digestive health as well. So 3 meals per day is our standard recommendation. And that's been going back for, like, you know, hundreds of years. And I think a problem that a lot of people have, including myself with young kids, is that we eat so quickly. We barely chew our food to its like recommended amount. We're swallowing food that is not completely chewed up. So it puts a little bit more work and stress on our digestive systems. And we should really be taking time to eat our food. We should be taking time not to just enjoy the food, but to allow our body to break down the food adequately. So we're getting all the nutrients that we really want from, well, I'm talking about specifically healthier foods, but hopefully, you know, chewing the food really well to allow for those nutrients to get absorbed into our system. In terms of like timing it should take to have a meal, again, you know, that's really subjective, but I would say that we all really need to make a better effort of taking our time to eat our food, chew our food, cut our food really well, and actually enjoy our food. And yeah, you know, to be completely frank, I mean, there are times where my kids are running around the house and I am scarfing down whatever I can in the shortest periods of time, knowing full well that this is not the best way to get all the nutrients, but unfortunately you just have to do what you have to do. But if you have the luxury of having that time, it is really recommended to do that. There's a practice for like an Ayurvedic medicine, for example, like the recommendation is to like chew the food until it's paste. Like whatever the food is, it doesn't matter if it's meat or vegetables or fruit, that's to chew it like until it's paste before even swallowing it. So your entire GI system, including your esophagus, your stomach, your intestines, your liver, gallbladder, pancreas allows the time to actually complete the digestive process adequately.
Well, let's talk about our food then. What should a meal that supports digestive health include?
We want foods that are going to be a combination of everything. So high fiber foods are incredibly important. Probiotic foods, prebiotic foods, lean protein is incredibly important, as well as healthier fats, and then obviously staying hydrated. So for example, grilled chicken with a light sauce, a side of quinoa, broccoli, and then if you want to get your pre and probiotics, you know, you can get garlic, onions, asparagus, leeks. Yogurt is incredibly healthy and enjoyable for a lot of people. Kefir, for example, you know, that's getting that well-balanced diet. So, like, you know, especially in clinic when I'm talking to patients about specific diets, I just tell them, hey, listen, the important thing is to get kind of everything in each meal if you're able to do so. Get your lean meats, get your combination of fruits and vegetables. If you're able to have a little bit of yogurt, that's important as well. Or like kimchi or kefir, sauerkraut, for example, which is not everyone's favorite thing in the world to eat. But getting a combination more often than not of all the different food groups, I think is incredibly important.
Now, doctor, what are some dietary changes that you would recommend for someone with non-chronic digestive disorders like acid reflux or constipation? And on that, what are some other dietary changes for those with chronic digestive disorders like ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease?
For the first part, you know, the recommendation is, well, not to overeat, number one, not to have larger, like very, very large meals at each time. For our acid reflux patients, we really want to limit the tomato-based foods, the high citrus-based foods and liquids. Really, really spicy foods is a common trigger for acid reflux as well. Fattier, greasier, fried foods tend to be triggers for acid reflux as well. So when we think about it, like the stomach is where the organ that produces the acid that's going to either reflux back to the esophagus or go adequately or appropriately down into the small bowel. If we're filling the stomach with food that is going to increase gastric acid production, number one, or that's going to sit in the stomach for a longer period of time, which we call like high residue foods, those tend to sit in the stomach for a longer period of times, which can contribute to more acid production than eventually acid reflux. With our constipation patients, yeah, we want them eating higher fiber foods, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, lean proteins, healthy fats, and that tends to help with our constipation patients. And unfortunately, you know, you can do everything right from a dietary standpoint and unfortunately still have symptoms of acid reflux, still have symptoms of chronic constipation. But if we can help in any way and from a dietary standpoint, it's important to do all those things to get kickstarted on improving your symptoms.
And can your diet impact your chances of developing colorectal cancer?
For colorectal cancer, there is some association with the low fiber, high red meat diet. There are other factors, of course, as well. But from a dietary standpoint, that is what's been determined to have some association. But can I tell you definitively that, you know, if you only eat red meat and you limit your fruits and vegetables, you're going to have colon cancer? No. Does it increase your risk? Possibly, yes. Unfortunately, I can't give you the percentages, but there has been association with low fiber, high red meat diets and processed food diets as well.
So can making these dietary changes actually treat or cure a chronic digestive condition? How does that work?
In terms of treatment, I think they can help with offsetting some of the symptoms. So I guess I didn't touch upon the chronic conditions like such as Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis, but having that well-balanced, healthy diet tends to decrease the chances of having an inflammatory response to the foods. With less processed foods or sugar substitutes, tends to be a little bit less risk of developing leaky gut syndrome, for example, or inflammation for that matter as well. So in terms of treating these chronic conditions or curing, no, not curing, but in terms of treating or helping alleviate some symptoms, absolutely. I think diet is incredibly important.
And doctor, to wrap us up today, what are some signs that someone's diet is the cause of their digestive discomfort? And what should their first steps be in improving their gut health?
You know, Caitlin, I think a really important thing that a lot of people don't do is keeping a food diary. And it doesn't have to be a pen and paper. I mean, you can go to your phone. You know, I try to tell my patients and even friends and family that whenever you're having GI symptoms, try to figure out the foods that you've had around that period of time, or even earlier in that day or the night before, to see if there's some consistent association between whether or not it's gas, bloating, diarrhea, constipation, abdominal pain, indigestion, to see if there's any clear food triggers that you're having on a consistent basis, which might have some association. So, yeah, I think that's a really important thing to do. And if there is anything clear, then you start avoiding those specific food groups. You know, celiac disease is becoming a lot, we're diagnosing it a lot more nowadays. And people are a little bit more cognizant of potentially having celiac disease. And if they don't have celiac disease, they can have gluten intolerance, which actually presents with, very, very similar symptoms to celiac disease. And, you know, if you're consistently having food groups with gluten and you're having symptoms, then hey, you know, further workup should be done. Or try going on a gluten-free diet. Let's say you're on a diet that's purely vegan, which is incredibly healthy. But a lot of vegan foods do cause a lot of gas and bloating as a byproduct because they are considered high FODMAP. FODMAP are fermentable oligosaccharides, disaccharides, monosaccharides, and polyols. These are carbohydrates that tend to cause more gas and bloating as a byproduct when they get broken down by the small bowel. But if you're eating a lot of those foods and you're complaining of gas, bloating, and indigestion, let's try to figure out which specific food groups or specific foods from your diet are contributing. So keeping a food diary, I think, is incredibly important. And it's like, I think it's one of the easiest things to do, but we don't do it. And understandably so. You're working when you're having lunch. In between your work day, are you really documenting these things? At the end of the day, if you're busy with kids or busy with X, Y, and Z, are you really documenting these things? But making that effort to do so, I think, is really beneficial to determine, hey, what do you tolerate and what don't you tolerate?
Thank you, Doctor, for being on the show. And thank you for tuning into this episode of Duly Noted, a health and care podcast. We hope you found the conversation with Dr. Desai insightful and helpful in understanding how diet influences digestive health. For more information and resources, be sure to visit dulyhealthandcare.com. Remember to stay informed and engaged with your own health management. Until next time, take care.